And it was kind of scary. I remember telling my husband one day, it's scary how much I can still operate on autopilot, and I should not be. We are not taking care of ourselves, but we have learned that autopilot is the norm, and it's not.
Welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Hanton. We're continuing our series on journeys of faith. And today I'd like to welcome Michelle Harms to the podcast. Major Michelle is an officer or a pastor in the Salvation Army, and I'm really excited for you to hear our conversation. So I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Michelle.
Thank you.
We're so glad that you took the time today to share a little bit about your story, which we're going to get to in a minute. Right now, we are in the middle of a series on sharing our faith stories, our faith journeys, and I'm really realizing that it's really more of a testimony of what the Lord has done in your life and how He has influenced you and shown up and guided you along your faith journey. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say. But first, we just need to know a little bit about you because, Michelle, I don't really know you that well. I work with you kind of, you know, from a distance remotely with Women's Ministries. Right. But we just want to know who you are. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I am from Minnesota. I'm a North girl. I've been an officer 21 years this June.
Wow.
Yeah, I am at DHQ right now. I'm the Women's Ministry Secretary, the Older Adult Ministry Secretary, the Community Care Ministry Secretary,
wow,
and the Divisional Missions Representative.
Can you fit all that on a name tag, please? Like let's acronym that. You know, in Salvation Army, we love our acronyms. What would that spell? It's crazy.
Right. My supervisor just last week said your signature on your email cracks me up every time with all the titles.
Man, you wear a lot of hats.
Yes. Yes. I love it, though.
Yeah, good. Good. And you're in the Mighty Midland Division, which is St. Louis area. Yes. Yeah. Yes. We were stationed at Maplewood Corps. So we've lived there.
Yeah.
That was in my high school years. So a long time ago. Don't want to age myself, but yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit about your family.
So my husband and I, this June, will celebrate 19 years of marriage. We have a 6-year-old boy, Eska, who is about to turn 7 in April. And a 3-year, well, he's 2, he will be 3 in 2 weeks.
Oh,
and his name is Esam. Babies in your 40s, you don't bounce back as easy.
Right.
So all of our friends, their kids are graduating and getting their driver's license, and I'm still shopping for pull-ups. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, when we became parents, we almost looked at each other and said, how do we be officers now?
Right.
We had been officers for 12 years, 12 and 13 years. And then we threw a child in there and we're like, what do we do now? So yeah, it changes your whole life dynamics for everything.
Yeah, I bet. So 21 years you've been in officership. So tell me a little bit about that journey. Like, where did you guys start out? And is this your first divisional appointment?
Yes.
Okay.
I've been here a little over a year, but only have been in this position since June. But we were both single officers when we were commissioned. And then a year and a half later, we got married and have kind of been all over. We've been in Indiana and Iowa and South Dakota.
Wow.
We did church plant in Iowa, which it is an interesting work to do in the Salvation Army. We actually served in 2 appointments, 15 years apart from each other.
Oh my
so
gosh.
That was extremely interesting. It was actually our first appointment. And then we went back 15 years later to serve there again. And they don't write a brief for that.
No, I was just going to say that's almost unheard of.
Yeah. And it's really interesting when you go and it's the same core people and the same community and they remember you from 15 years earlier. So it's really hard not to just go back into the groove of things.
Right.
I remember standing in the kitchen of our quarters when the first day we moved in, and I said to my husband, I almost feel like everything has to go back the way it was 15 years before, but I don't remember.
Right. Like, I feel like I'm reaching for the cups over here, but they're over here now. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, sometimes it's just a fluke and it just happens. And sometimes you're specifically asked to go back to help the community. But yeah. When we went there the first time, it was our first appointment as a married couple. It was a very difficult time personally in our lives. And so we go back 15 years later and you're like, please don't hold those first time, that first appointment against me. We're different. Yeah. We've all traveled for 15 years and hopefully we're all differently at a place that we can come together again. But
Oh my gosh. So when did you come to the Midland division?
In 2021.
Okay. Oh, during pandemic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we were the core officers at St. Charles.
Okay.
And then in November of 22, my husband suffered strokes and had to go on medical leave, which then brought me here to DHQ as like a pro temp appointment. And then in June, I took this position over and have been here, and he's still on medical leave.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Whew, man. Been through it.
Yeah, our family has definitely been through it. If it's out there to be gone through, we have gone through it.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I'm looking forward now to hearing all about this. So
yeah,
now that we're kind of into the journey a little bit, we're on our way. Why don't you just, you can start wherever you want and tell us your testimony, your faith story.
So I've always been the girl who has it together. I love to plan through conflict and through struggles. I've always been raised to be not a powerful person, but I'm always strong-willed. I have it together. There's nothing too big for me. And I think that you just kind of wear that as a badge of honor. And over the last year and a half, I've learned it was not a badge of honor. And I was actually doing a lot of damage to myself. So it was November 2nd, and I was in the backyard playing with the boys. We were raking up leaves and jumping into it. And my husband, Nathan, had a chiropractor's appointment, and he called, and he just said, hello. And as most wives, we instantly know something's wrong in just one word. And I said, what's happening? And so through just signs that his chiropractor is like, you're not your normal self, you're off. He couldn't get a blood pressure reading. He's like, we're going to send you to urgent care. And so he went to urgent care, and then he called and he said, they're sending me to the hospital. And so our daycare worker lives across the street. She is amazing. So I ran over there and I said, you know, the boys don't know anything. I need you to come play with the boys. Just pretend to have a happy time. I'm going to go work with dad on something.
Okay.
So they did some scans. He was in the hospital for a week, and they had discovered that this was the second set of two strokes.
Whoa.
So he had two strokes in August. Through timelines of the injury on his brain, we discovered he had it while we were on vacation in Minnesota.
And you had no signs then?
No signs. Well, there were signs, but we didn't equate it to a stroke. So the doctor, through asking questions, you know, was there a day that you were just really irritated or agitated by noises, things like that, and we could pinpoint it. There was a morning in August he had woke up and he just thought he had slept wrong and his one whole side of his body hurt. And he was really agitated at things. And he was like, oh, it's vacation. It's not my bed. It's fine. We went on. And then in November, he had another set of two strokes.
Goodness.
And so that's when he went on medical leave, and we went through lots of doctor's appointments. He was getting better. He started to get healthy again, was almost where he was pre-November strokes. And then he had two more again, and it wiped out everything that he had worked on and did more damage to him this time around. And so it was a real struggle. And as wives and mothers, we put on the happy face and we make sure everybody around us is happy. And, and you know, we try to make life as normal as it is. And through that, I forgot about myself. We had a really hard time. Isam, who is our youngest, we had him during COVID. In the appointment that we were in a second time, where we were the largest and only feeding program. So we did not get a break during COVID. We were even busier during COVID and a newborn who only ate 2 ounces, 2 hours. for the first 4 months of his life. So
oh my word.
All moms are like, I hear you.
Yeah, right.
I remember saying to my husband one day, I don't want one of those books, What to Expect When You're Expecting. I want a book, It's Okay to Cry Over Milk.
Thank you. Yes.
It's okay to cry because you want to sleep and your baby's not.
Oh my gosh, we could do a podcast just on that.
Yes. The real things they don't tell you about motherhood.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
And so I think that I just kept going and going and going. And the November strokes kind of hit hard because at that time, Esom was like slowing down. He was finally getting into the groove of things. And I remember a week before the strokes, I said to my husband, I feel like I'm starting to breathe again. Mm. Like, I feel like I'm catching my breath and I feel like I can find out who I'm supposed to be again. Mm. And then this happened. And St. Charles is a relatively large appointment and it took him out of kettles.
Oh my word.
And so now I was doing his job and my job and home at the same time.
And baby.
Yeah. We had to teach Eska, who at that time was five turning six. We had to teach him how to go across the street to neighbors and knock on the door and say, my daddy's home and he's not answering me. I need your help.
Oh my gosh.
So how they have, you know, fire drills at school and tornado drills at school. We had to do that with him. If mommy's at work and daddy's not waking up or daddy's laying on the floor,
yeah,
what to do. And
oh my
so,
gosh,
you know,
poor kid.
Yes. Yeah.
But you had to do it because you had to run everything.
Yes. And worrying how much long-term damage am I doing to my babies?
Oh.
Yeah. And so, I think I just pushed through Christmas because what else do you have to do? And we went on vacation to the Gulf. And I remember coming home at the Gulf. My husband and the two boys all took turns getting sick with the stomach flu.
Oh, geez.
So it was great. Not vacation.
Right.
So on the way home, I remember breaking down crying and driving and telling my husband, I think I'm empty.
Yes.
I think I've lost all my reserves, but I still have to keep going. And I don't know what that looks like.
How do you do it? Yeah.
So we talked a little bit and then we came home. And the very next week, we were told we were moving and Nathan was going on medical leave. So you put that happy face back on and you pack up your whole house. And at this time, he was not allowed to lift more than 5 pounds. So he can't help.
Nope.
And so it's you go to the office and you do your job, your husband's job. Then you come home and pack up a house. And so it's just a big interruption. And then when he had the strokes in May again, it was like ripping off a Band-Aid and the scab that was healed came off with it. And I kind of went to a dark place.
Yeah.
I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
I didn't find joy in things. I stopped doing devotions because either I was really annoyed with God. Like, are you kidding me? I don't want to sing praises and read psalms of glory and goodness and hallelujah when you know where I'm sitting. So I was either really angry at God, or really hurt or really confused.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand why am I punishing myself by sitting in front of the Bible, which is a really odd thing for an officer to say, but it was real.
Yep.
And I'm one of those people that when a problem comes, I try really hard to quickly fix it and get to the next thing. And during this phase, a really good officer friend said, I think you're supposed to sit in this pain for a little bit and you're supposed to figure out what this is. And I was like, ah, I'm okay. No, thank you. I need to figure out how to fix my family, get back
right
to normal.
Right.
And I didn't. I didn't want to work at DHQ because you feel all eyes are upon you. And I didn't want my friends to think, well, why are you at DHQ? You're not a good representative to look at. And so just all aspects of my life, I felt like I was letting everybody down and I had to keep going and I didn't have any reserves left. So I was like, I told my husband, I feel like I'm a car who has no oil, no gas, no windshield washer fluid, and I'm still trying to get down the highway.
You were. That's exactly what, yeah, what you were.
So I said to my husband one night in September, finally, I said, I'm broken. I don't know how to get unbroken. And so I talked to my doctor and I had finally admitted, I think I need to be on an antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
And I just need to give my body time to heal. And in this, not saying yes to extra things, not forcing myself to try to find out who I was and get that back, but learn I'm a 42-year-old and I don't know who I am anymore. And being okay with that.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest journey of allowing God to tell me it's okay. I'm okay with you putting yourself in a timeout.
Yeah.
I'm okay with you giving yourself a break because you're damaged.
Yeah.
And the damage is okay right now.
Yeah.
And I remember January 1st, I started my first devotions. So I went a good 8 months without doing devotions. It was a blessing that I was not at a core that was in charge of Bible study or preaching. I know that there are a lot of officers who have to do that. And I give big props to them that can still lead people spiritually where they feel dead. And it's a big burnout and a big hurt for officers. And so I'm just excited. I have joy again. I'm still trying to find out who I am and what I like. And laugh about it.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I can't go back and undo it. Our entire existence of life and faith and officership has changed. And we've learned to mourn the things that as a family, we will never be able to do now because of my husband's health. But not just mourning it and leaving it, but mourning it and then finding a replacement.
Yeah.
What can we do? What do we find joy in? What are trips we can take now that will replace the trips that we were really like, we were a big hiking family, big outdoor, big nature, and he can't do that ever again. And so, you know, finding little parks that have paved paths or learning to take smaller walks that aren't so big. And so the new rule is kind of, if you can't keep up with our 3-year-old, then we're doing too much.
Okay. Yeah. You know, that's your yardstick. Use that.
Yeah. Learning that it's 8 o'clock at night and we might be finding ourselves in bed and it's just a season. There will be a day in a few years where our children will put themselves to bed.
Yes.
Where we will find our time again as husband and wife who just sit and maybe read the same book and have that conversation. But right now that book might be The Little Engine That Could.
Yeah. See, and you are. See that right there. I see it. I see the joy. Listeners, you can't see her face, but I can. And I can see that little glimmer of joy that the spark's coming back. Yeah.
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 And being okay with it. We went on a date a couple of weeks ago and my husband said, well, let's go to Cold Stone and get some ice cream. And I said, can I just tell you something? I don't like Cold Stone. And he's like, what? He's like, we've been doing this for 19 years. And I said, I know, but I don't like it. And he's like, I only go there because you like it. And I said, I think I always felt bad for telling you I don't like it, but I think I want to say I don't like it.
Hey, you know, like speak your truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the journey is like finding my voice in so many ways of saying, you know, I probably would have said yes to that, but saying yes to that is probably what helped get me to this part. And so nobody is going to advocate for myself like myself.
Yep.
And so learning what my contribution to my own body is. Last week I took a spiritual gifts inventory and like my top four were like helps and service and hospitality. And I said to my husband, no wonder I'm empty. Mm-hmm. Like not that those spiritual gifts are bad, but I was not doing anything to balance those spiritual gifts. So for years and years, probably my whole life, I'm just a giver, but I never learned tools and resources to give myself. And so I'm learning that now sometimes just to say, even to my family, I need 5 minutes to go sit in a room alone. I will set a timer. And when the timer comes off, I will come out.
Yeah.
And having a husband who loves me and will purposely make sure those kids are distracted or like, let's go for a walk. Let's go outside to covet that for me because he sees how much I value that now and what I need for my body. So yeah, it's definitely been a process. And
yeah, you're giving yourself permission to be you, you know, to take back some of that time. Children, go set the table. Your mother needs 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's okay for us to ask our kids to help and participate and be a part of the process, you know, of giving you a break. And they will see that. They will start to recognize that, and they will pick up those good tools that they need, you know, in the future for their wives. You know, your boy, you're raising boys right now that need to see how a husband should be helping his wife, you know, along the journey.
Yeah. Another phrase that I had learned during this period was decision fatigue.
I
had never heard of it. And I was like, what in the world is that? And so I did some researching, and it was a husband who was a therapist. And he said one morning it clicked in his mind. And so he did this research on it. His wife baked some muffins, and she had them in the muffin tin on the stove. And the wife was getting the little girl in the high chair, and she was talking to the daughter, and she was talking to the husband, and the husband said, are these muffins too hot to give to her? And she turned around and she said, just touch the dang things.
Right.
Like, how many times do we want to say that? And he was like, well, that was kind of rude. And she's like, you are a grown man standing next to the muffins. You know the temperature our daughter can have. Touch the muffins and decide. And so he was saying, for all the decisions that we're making as women throughout our lives, sometimes we are having three conversations at once.
Oh my gosh.
We're answering this question. We're talking to our husbands about meals, and we're still dealing with something at the core, and people are constantly interjecting. And so it's like a blinking traffic light, and all these cars are just coming in. And so if you are a partner or like a spouse or like even a partner at work, what is a decision I can make that is one less decision that person has to make? And could my question just wait? Could that husband have either touched the muffins and been like, oh, these are too hot, I'm going to put them on a plate and give to my daughter, or these muffins are too hot, I'm still going to put it on a plate and set it off to the side. But to have women's brains constantly stop and have to make decisions and then pick up on the last decision we were making. And I said to my husband, oh my goodness, I have decision fatigue.
Yes.
But you have that feeling, but until somebody puts a word to it, you just don't know what it is. So because you don't know what it is, you ignore it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't want to pay attention to it, because then one of the things I was always worried about is this a real thing? And does anybody else experience this? And if not, then am I just being a baby?
Oh my gosh. How many times have I said that?
Yeah. We don't think that we deserve the same attention, because if that was one of the kids, you would have found their favorite stuffy. You would have wrapped them in their blanket and made a little couch fort. But we're like, nope, we have to keep trailing on, and we have to keep trudging on, and somebody needs chicken nuggets cut somewhere.
I'm fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, you know, I think I need a moment to assess myself so I can be there for everybody else. And I used to think that the whole, if the airplane masks drop, put it on yourself. And then I was like, that's the most backward thing for a mother.
Yes.
But I get it. I have to be alive to help my child, but I never gave myself that attention in the past. Mm-hmm. And I literally burned all of my engines, and I burned myself, and I lost myself in the process. And it was kind of scary. I remember telling my husband one day, it's scary how much I can still operate on autopilot, and I should not be.
Yeah.
So we had a conversation like, how many officers are just zombies out there? Because we still have to mother and father a core, mother and father home. Sometimes we're mothering and fathering our own families who are brothers and sisters and parents. And so we are not taking care of ourselves, but we have learned that autopilot is the norm and it's not. And so we're doing such a disservice to us. And I have learned, I always used to be afraid I would disappoint people by saying no. And I've learned I have yet to have somebody disappointed in me saying, I can't do that right now.
Right. Or that you would say it's okay if you say no. Like you offer the permission for them to disappoint, even though you would never be disappointed. But yet we can't give ourselves that same grace.
Right. Another thing that I had to come to terms with it's recent. And I said to Nathan, I have to learn how to feel sorry for the old Michelle. And I said, in this process of me going through these stages of pretty much self-spiraling to the bottom, I said, where were all of those people that I have poured into for years to say, Michelle, I think something's off, or Michelle, I think something's wrong. And so I said, I kind of feel sorry for me. Like, where were those people that I have poured into? So it really made me examine boundaries of what I give of myself to people, because it's not always given in return. And not that relationships always have to be a give and take. There are going to be those relationships that I give, give, give. But I don't have to have all of those relationships in my life at once. And so having that cup of coffee or that cup of tea and almost having a funeral for those sad things I have to put to bed and say, I'm really sorry nobody showed up for you there, but I'm showing up for you now.
Yes.
And it's myself.
Yes. And that's okay.
Nobody teaches us that.
No, they don't.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. My daughter, she went through a really hard time of self-hate. And she said to me, she goes, what do you do when you are your own worst bully? Because you can't run away from yourself. And you can't fight yourself.
And it's not physical all the time for somebody else to see. It's,
exactly.
It's stuck in your brain of I'm beating myself up over this. And nobody sees the bruises I've done to myself. And so you really are alone, locked in a closet with your bully.
Yes, you are. And it's that whole inner dialogue that is the negative inner dialogue. And you can't get away from it. And I do believe that is a tool the enemy uses, you know, feeding us constantly that negative thoughts about ourselves and that we could be better and all of those things. I know that for a fact. And my daughter has come so far from that. She has learned...
Awesome.
She has a completely different self-image. So many things are so much better. God has actually delivered her from so much. I'm very proud
I love
of her.
It.
Yeah. But I started blaming myself for what she was going through. Why didn't I notice that? How could I not see that? You know, like now all this is coming out and I'm like, I'm feeling, where as a parent was I to not see some of these warning signs or whatever? But that's another part of it. You got to forgive yourself too.
Yes.
There's that whole like self-forgiveness that we have to allow ourselves. And I love that you're also taking control of your no, you know, and using it when you think you need it and just giving yourself permission and forgiveness for saying no.
And even if it means because I said no, I'm now at home on my couch watching Netflix.
Thank you.
My no is still valid.
Still valid. And you know what? I don't have to. I'm always the one, too, to give an excuse.
Yes. Like somehow my no needs to be backed up with a good
Seriously.
Enough legit reason, or it's not a good enough no.
We don't have to qualify it. If I want to be home because I need a minute to be home by myself, then that's my reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, and that at home, after it came to my, like after it came to fruition and I saw it, I started to realize how often I do it. I would go home, like after dinner or anything, be like, anybody need anything before I sit down? Girl, just sit down.
Yes, exactly.
They are all very capable of going to get something or saying, can you help me with something? So like when the boys want a snack, I would be the first to jump up and be like, yeah, let me get a bowl for you, all of this stuff. So now I've learned to say, you know where it is.
Yeah.
Like if you physically can get it, learn to get it. Yeah. And if not, could you maybe go get a bowl or a cup and get the juice out of the fridge and I'll pour it for you.
Yeah.
But showing them partnership. And I'm also learning, I'm not raising just my boys. I'm raising somebody's spouse.
Yes.
And so I don't want to set the standard where they think the moms and the wives do it all.
Yep.
Like be a help in the partnership of what you can, and then leave the rest up and say, I don't know how to do this, but can you teach it to
yes.
me? And not feeling guilty about it.
No.
But mom guilt and woman guilt is an ugly thing that just, you almost wear it like a jacket every morning. And you almost start your morning off for feeling guilty that I hit the snooze button instead of being like, I earned that snooze button.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's so much in just that mom guilt.
Yeah.
There's so much in all of that. We need to have a panel, you right. know, get people together. And
how did you handle it?
Yeah.
And it really does become a personal journey. Like there's no book that works for everybody because everybody's guilt is so driven by different and personal things. Yep. But learning that it is a voice of the enemy mm-hmm. that is trying to make you feel guilty for being a better person when in reality, that's all that God wanted for us was, I mean, the Bible is full of ways to be a better person mm-hmm. for ourselves and for being an image of him. Yeah. But I can't be an image of God if I'm like depleting myself constantly and not filling myself up. And then finding those verses, like Jesus went away from his disciples to pray. He had a nap in the boat because he was exhausted from a big crowd of ministry. When I go home on a Sunday, I have learned to value naps.
Yes.
I always felt guilty for taking a nap. If I have time for a nap, then there's something else on my to-do list I could do. Yeah. But to learn now to just say, I'm just going to go take a nap and the world will keep turning. Yeah. And if there's something when I wake up that needs to be done, I'll prioritize.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, there's no shame in that. I know. And I think too about, we always say that Jesus is fully God, fully man, and he experienced everything that a human could possibly experience. Oh, right. So Jesus experienced anxiety then, because right. I have anxiety. He knows what that's like. Oh yeah, Garden of Gethsemane. Hello. There was great anxiety. So, and Jesus modeled for us what we do in those situations. When he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, what was he doing? He was praying.
Right.
That was his first line of defense, was prayer. And obviously we know that there's more to it than that, but thank you, Jesus, for modeling that for us and giving us permission to do that.
Right. Yeah. But the sad thing is we don't give us permission.
Because we do feel like the world will collapse if we don't. I do think about that. There are days when I'm just like, I just sit around the table while everyone's eating dinner, you know, and in my mind, I'm like, what would you guys do without me? I really don't know.
Right. Do you guys even know where the vacuum is?
Right. And I'm not saying that because I think I'm the world's best mom. I just am like, seriously, have I done a disservice to my family by doing all of the things that I always have? You know, by not, like you said, by not teaching them, my kids.
That was something that I really struggled. So this summer I was at camp a lot. If I wasn't staying out at camp, I was commuting every morning. Oh, I would wake up at 5 o'clock and get ready and drive the hour and a half to camp and to work there and then come back home in time to like do dinner and stuff. And it was the anxiety of leaving like Nathan home alone. Yeah. Would the kids know how to dial 911 or anything like that? And then the more Nathan got better, the more I would come home to like the house being clean and laundry being done. And maybe he only got the laundry from the basement to the living room, but the laundry was done and cleaned and the boys had dinner. And I remember saying one night, I feel like I'm not needed anymore. Oh, I feel like everything I used to do for this family, I'm not needed because it's all being done now. And so it was realizing, wait, was I overextending myself when nobody asked me to do this?
Right.
Like, so how much of my tiredness and anxiety and needing extra care was because I inflicted it upon myself and nobody was expecting that of me? And then being blind to, hold up, my husband knows how to cook. He knows how to do laundry. He knows how to clean a toilet. Why hasn't he been doing this for 19 years?
Yes.
Because I've never asked.
Yeah.
Because I took it upon myself. Because I would rather burn myself out at the end of the night than to imposition somebody with something that is a household chore just to be a house.
Yep. Yep. That's it.
So it's really telling myself the truth to the lie I've been telling myself this whole time. Yeah. And then being angry, like, are you kidding me, Michelle?
I know. And then the cycle starts all over again. So I wanted to ask you, too, when you were talking earlier about your spiritual gifts, when you said that about hospitality and our personality types fit in with our spiritual gifts, but sometimes they can get the better of us. Sometimes we wrap ourselves in that, well, this is my spiritual gift. Yes, it is. But the Holy Spirit also helps you create boundaries so that you can, you can't pour from an empty cup. You know, you've got to be filled with him, with his spirit in order to even do those things. Right. So,
and learning as women, we don't get a lot of praise. We're overlooked. So when we use our hospitality and our service and our helps, and people are like, oh, you did such an amazing job, we kind of create an unhealthy balance in our brain of, if I help more, I get more praise and I get more noticed.
Yeah,
and then it becomes this unhealthy drug.
Yes.
Well, I'm feeling low in my self-esteem, so if I go do something for somebody else, they will praise me, they will notice me, and that will fill me. And then we get empty again, and we just create this really unhealthy cycle of, I help, I get praised, I'm empty. I'm help, I get praised, I'm empty. And I guess I never paid attention to that in my life before.
Yeah.
And so my spiritual gifts kind of became my own enemy. And so I can still use those spiritual gifts, obviously, and still use them to glorify God, but also find healthy tools to replace what I've depleted. You know, if I have to do a mother-daughter tea that took me 2 hours to set up, it was a 2-hour event and a 2-hour to clean up, then what am I doing to give me those 6 hours back to refill me up?
Yeah.
Even if it means staying home the next day or getting my favorite Starbucks drink and wandering around Barnes and Noble,
mm-hmm.
like, what is it that I'm doing to replenish that? But we almost don't give ourselves permission, especially mm-hmm. as officers, to be selfish in our time to replenish what we just depleted for everybody. And again, Jesus did that. Yeah. I'm going over there. You stay over here.
Mm-hmm.
And he traveled alone, and he took that alone time to be like, I'm empty and I need to fill up before you guys take any more of me.
Yeah.
But somehow we think we're better.
Yes, exactly. I love that too. Jesus sent his disciples into the boat, knowing that there was a storm coming, and he sent them anyway, but he needed a minute to go pray first.
Yeah.
So he needed to take that time because he knew he was going to have to show up in that storm and do his thing. You know?
Right.
So even in that, like sometimes, like you have walked through some pretty serious storms.
Yeah.
And God knew those storms were coming.
Right.
And oh my gosh, how I can relate to what you said about being angry or disappointed or, I guess disappointed is more the word in God, you know, like, really, God, like I prayed about this.
Right.
Or do we really need one more thing? Like, when's the other shoe going to drop? I can't, I have no more shoes.
Right.
I'm just really disappointed and I don't want to pray and I don't have anything to say, you know, or I don't want to read my Bible. It's just too painful for me to pick that up.
Right. Yeah.
But God also knows where we are. He knows that we're in that place. He knows that we have nothing to say. He knows we have nothing more to give. So tell me just a little bit about what the realization for you, how did you feel God's presence, even in those desert moments, even in those moments where you were just like, I can't even right now.
Honestly, I don't think I felt him in the desert, probably because I shut him out.
Mm.
Because I think that I just wanted to be angry and I wanted to be that toddler who threw a tantrum.
Yeah.
And I think even as moms, sometimes we look at our toddlers throwing tantrums and be like, I'm just going to let you get it out of your system.
Yes.
And then I'll deal with you.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that I noticed that in myself. I don't want God to stop me mid-tantrum. I don't want you to send a song my way. I don't want you to send a beautiful verse my way. I want to get all my disdain and ugly out and then let's deal with it. I also think that I knew I needed, my body physically needed time for that antidepressant to like help me be clear again, because on my own, I was more cloudy than anything. And so I think that I gave myself that space mm-hmm. of, you'll feel it when it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in this, we went to a joy conference, mm-hmm. the whole division, as all of us female officers went, Danny Gokey was doing his concert and like everybody's in praise. And I'm like, can I like just hitchhike back to the hotel? And there was this really beautiful song that came on and I just sat in the chair and closed my eyes. And it was because it was in like defiance, like, I don't want to be here.
Yep.
And I remember telling myself, it's okay. Everybody thinks you're just praising with your eyes closed.
That's good.
And so I think that I didn't force myself out of my time out. I just waited for it to flow. And then it was around Christmas time. We went back home to my parents And there was something just magical that I felt home, literally, and like my soul felt I was at home. And I looked around the room and I remember thinking, I'm safe. Like I made it through and I'm here. And it's a 12-hour ride from my parents to our house. So it's a pretty long drive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, boys are in the back seat watching a DVD and Nathan's sleeping. And I'm just driving along. And I remember starting to pray. And the first words out of my mouth is, God, I know you're still there.
Yes.
But I'm ready to show up.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to him, I don't know who I am. I don't know who you want me to be, but I cannot go back to her. And I remember just starting to make conversations with God and not my prayer life, what it used to look like, because I think it was imitation. Because I was empty and on autopilot and burned out, I think I just knew the words to say, but my heart never felt any of those things. Mm. And so I'm learning, even if I just start and say, I don't know what to say to you, God, but I am here if you have anything to say to me. And if not, let's just sit in each other's presence.
Yes.
And then sometimes I'm looking at TikTok in that and realizing it's okay. And if God needs me, he'll say, okay, it's time, let's talk. Mm. And there have been those times. And I've always been those people, if you do like a read through the Bible in a year, mm-hmm. I can't do that. And I know it, because if for some reason I miss a day,
yeah.
the next day I have to speed through it to catch up. And then I speed through the current one. And then I'm like, I didn't digest any of that no. because I feel like I failed and I'm behind. So I'm doing the recap Bible.
Okay.
And there's dates at the top. And I said to my husband, I don't know if I can do this. I feel left behind, but it just says like day one, day two, day three, day four. So I felt that guilt in January doing it. And it was February 1st and I turned the page and it said day 32. And I said to my husband, I don't know the day of the year anymore.
Right.
So even like last night,
that's awesome.
Our two-year-old fell asleep at 5 o'clock in the car on the way to dinner. Anybody who's a parent knows that means your night is gone. So he's still awake at 11 o'clock at night. So my husband and I are tag teaming, going in there, like laying with him, talking to him, singing with him. And I looked at my devotions last night on my nightstand and I went, not tonight. And I didn't feel guilty.
No, right.
And it was a really nice, like, there was no doomsday waiting for me. There's no like God taking away a merit in his and mine relationship,
right.
but just saying for the sanctity of trying to do devotions the right way, sometimes it means skipping a night so that I can take it in the next day.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that God turned his back on me, because he knows, he saw my whole day. He knows what a punk my two-year-old is being.
Right.
And so I don't think God's like,
right.
You need to do your Bible before your bed. And I was like, no, I'm okay. And if anybody understands this situation, it's God.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just because we are not ready to talk to God or
right.
read our Bibles, that does not mean that God's like, well, done. I'm done with you.
Right.
God is so patient.
Right. And those are resources.
Yes. Yes.
Those are resources to help me in my walk.
Yes.
And so if all the Bibles burned up in the world today, nothing changed in my relationship with God.
Right.
And I think that's why it says, hide my word in your heart.
Mm.
So on those days that I don't open it, it's still there. And a verse might pop up in my mind. A song might come on the radio. And that 3-minute and 52-second song might be the devotions I needed that day.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it's not a demerit because I didn't open my Bible.
Right. Right. Exactly. That
yeah.
is, someone needs to write a book on that kind of spiritual discipline.
Yeah.
The permission of, I don't know, we need to come up with a title. We don't have to work at being good enough for God. Okay. That
right.
is, that has nothing to do with us. God
right.
will love us no matter what. Does
right.
he want to be close to us? And does he give us the tools to do that? Yes, of course. But again, he knows,
right.
he knows each person individually, and he knows what each person needs from day to day.
Yeah.
And if you need to put your devotions aside for the day and just say a quick prayer, like, okay, Lord, I'll see you tomorrow. I love you.
Right. I almost wish there was like a second volume to the Bible that only talked about what was discussed between village to village as Jesus was walking with his disciples, because I bet there was more ministry in those side roads than there were at raising the dead and turning water into wine and feeding of the 5,000. Like, yeah, those were big things, but a lot of things that we overlook in the Bible is Jesus did these big things, but then when it was just him and his disciples, he went into the meat of it and told them more. And so I think that I think our relationship with Jesus is more in the hidden things of not rigidness, but just the relationship. But somehow, somehow we've done the whole Bible before bed, Bible before breakfast, and it's almost becoming militant.
Yeah.
And that's when we feel guilty for not doing it, because it's become of a checklist instead of a check-in.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's good.
And I think more is done in a check-in than a checklist.
Yeah. This is deep stuff. This is stuff that I feel like we all struggle with at one point or another in our lives.
This is life, but we hide it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I refuse. I'm learning. I'm a very shy, introverted person. Not a lot of people know me, but too much of what I went through is real life. And if I, who thought my whole life was put together in this cute little beige bow, could fall apart, how many other people out there are like, can I just take the bow off and be real and say my life is a hot mess? And no bin or organizing or label maker is going to help it.
I know, really, seriously. I wish we had just that button to push.
Right.
Just make it. Jesus, fix it.
Right.
Yeah. This has been really refreshing. And I am so grateful for you sharing all of this.
Oh,
people need
you.
To hear this. And I know that there are listeners out there right now, like light bulbs are just bursting over their head. Like, oh my gosh, this is me. This is me.
Yeah.
And they need to know it's okay.
Yeah. I really want, especially women, because we deal with it a lot, to not feel guilty about not having it together, to not feel guilty about sometimes your faith walk with Jesus is just another to-do thing, and to not feel guilty about it, but it does come back to what it's supposed to be. And sometimes we have to fall apart and get all of it out of our system before God will put us back together how he intended us to be his daughters.
A reset.
Yeah. And you're never too old for it.
You're never too old for it. Hallelujah.
I'm 42 and trying to figure out who I am now, because I thought I knew and she was so wrong.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much, Michelle.
This has been
such a great conversation, and I know that you're going to inspire and encourage someone out there listening today needed to hear what you had to say.
I hope so. Thank you.
What a great conversation, full stop. I don't think there's much more to say, but I hope you found this conversation to be encouraging and inspiring and, you know, maybe even a little triggering to make you think. Philippians 1:6 says that he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. He promises to be faithful. That's all for today, and as always, I hope that this podcast has left you feeling prepared and equipped for tomorrow. And I'll see you real soon. God bless you.